Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, December 8th, 2011. We're nearing the end of the year. Good grief. Where did this year go? Do any of you wish we had it back? Wonder what 2012 is going to bring. All of the dire predictions of 2012 and then the giving the white hats the ability to come in and say, don't worry about that, nothing's going to happen, that's just a bunch of crazy people out there, doomsdayers, they call them. At any rate, and as you know, I don't make any predictions. If I had real data, I wouldn't make a prediction, I would give you the data. That's different than making a blind prediction. And long, long, long ago, thousands of years ago, a famous man was asked one time, he said, when talking about the coming of end days, he said, when, and I'm not saying we're in the end days, it sure seems like we are, certainly a lot of factors that lead up to the predictions that were made back then. And by the way, the point was that don't believe anybody who makes a prediction based on a date. So anybody that's trying to set out information or misinformation is going to try and give you a date. And then what happens is that date comes and goes and nothing happens and it creates disinterest in the topic. So at any rate, don't fall into the trap of looking for dates or believing people with dates. I have another little comment in a minute about that. But at any rate, in England, interesting news, taxation and is falling behind because of the economy being down. So it turns out that some of that taxation gets turned into income for the Queen and the Lords and the Manors of England, the royalty, the royal family, and it's quite extensive. So all of these people have their properties and, of course, descended down from the age-old empire, or the English kingdom, you might say. But I thought it was pretty funny when I saw that the Queen of England's personal budget was being cut. And some of the lords and ladies are having actually all of their incomes cut. So they're trying to, I know that, I forget who it was, but it said that Prince Philip, I believe, was supporting one of them from his personal fortune. So just bizarre, bizarre, you know, living in the, 500 to 1,000 years ago era with kings and queens and manors and lords and ladies and houses of whatever. Pretty ridiculous. There's a lot of wealthy people in the United States that are feeling the pinch. I know a lot of, for example, I've got some people that I know that live in the Florida area. And they said any day of the week, a long time ago, you would see the big boats moving up and down the coastal canal and through the canals out into the ocean for the pleasure cruises of the wealthy of the world. And you don't see that anymore. They're just not there. The people just, these are the wealthy, the multi-gazillionaires. They're more than millionaires. They got big money. They own worldwide corporations, etc. Those people just aren't there anymore. Everybody around the world, when the Queen of England budget gets cut, you know that the budget cuts are far and wide. They're reaching far and wide. So at any rate, just if you're hurting, just make sure you feel sorry for the Queen of England, too, because her budget got cut. Pretty pathetic, at any rate. But on those lines, I always tell people, live on many levels. You should be able to move between those levels easily so that if you have to have a garden, if you have to live at that level, you can still live a quality lifestyle. And then if you are a millionaire and you have a lot of money and you go to the grocery store and buy the best steaks, that's good. But also have many levels set up in your life so you can live at a reduced what you might call reduced monetary level, but still maintain the quality of life. And there's kind of a trick to that. A lot of wealthy people have never had problems. They've never had to do without. And I've had a chance recently to be amongst some of the poorest people in the, I wouldn't say in the world, but some of the poorest people in the United States and its holdings. And a lot of those people are very happy. They also have a two-edged view of the world. They really don't like America and what it stands for, but then most of these areas depend on their income for tourism, and they also go after that American model where you make money, and then you go to the store and buy food, and you go to the store and buy clothes, you go to the store and buy other things. They all want internet and TV. So they're half, they got one foot in the modern world and another foot in the primitive world, so to speak, but they don't want to plant a garden, they don't want to produce their own food, so a lot of these people are, I would say, confused. They really have not gotten a grasp on what it means to be independent, and what it means to be independent is don't use the American model. The American economic model is you have a loan for your house, you have a loan for your car, you drive to work and work a 40-hour-a-week job, and that's what you do. Your kids, you don't know them. Your family, you don't know them. That's the American model. It doesn't work. It's not something that is good for society or the basis of society, which is the family. So at any rate, just a quick note, I was a guest on the John Moore Show this past week. I'm many times a guest there, but John and I had been talking about my being on his show for some time, and for one reason or another, it just didn't work out. But we had a pretty good hour-long discussion, and at the beginning, John read a whole laundry list of earth changes items that were just in the news recently. Volcanoes around the world, the high winds, of course, which are in Southern California, the Los Angeles winds, 100-plus mile-per-hour winds lasting for days and days. And I put a posting on my webpage this past week regarding that. Now, the National Weather Service is calling these the Santa Ana winds, and they're anything but Santa Ana winds. Now, let me just tell you, Santa Ana winds are typically the winds come out of northern Mexico across the high desert in west, so they come from the southeast over by Mexico, which the winds come a bit north and west, and then over to Los Angeles. So if you're in a L.A. area around October, November, early December, these winds from the east start coming in, and they're hot and dry. They can fuel wildfires, etc. And they're called the Santa Ana winds. But the winds, by the way, the Santa Ana winds typically will run up to 40 miles an hour, which is a pretty good wind, but it's not 100 miles an hour. There's a big difference between a 40-mile-an-hour wind and a 100-mile-an-hour wind. A 100-mile-an-hour wind lasting for days and days. Additionally, the winds that are experienced in Los Angeles were coming from the north. They came from the north. They kind of swung westward just a little bit, very much not the Santa Ana winds. And then the National Weather Service says, well, there's a high-pressure cell there, so maybe these winds will keep up for a few days. And I was somewhat awestruck by the fact that they would put just ridiculous science in there and then make a prediction, basically a baseless prediction, because if the winds continued, then they could say, yeah, this was part of our prediction, a normal weather pattern prediction. Which is just ridiculous, because if there were a high pressure cell, a typical high pressure cell will keep the weather away. In fact, a typical high pressure cell, once it comes in and sets over your location, it prevents the high winds from coming into your area. So, National Weather Service, once again, completely clueless as to what's going on. And of course, I've been talking all along about the Jupiter winds. These are the Jupiter winds, the winds that occur because we are in an electrical alignment with Jupiter. And had a fan write in, and it's a good question. We are very much moving out of a direct alignment with Jupiter. October 28th was the actual inferior conjunction of Earth with Jupiter. But it turns out that the solar wind and the electrical currents don't always follow a linear path. So that's why we're still seeing the effects of Jupiter connecting with Earth. This past week also, some websites were showing that the Earth was involved in some very, when you looked at the satellite data, it looked very much like the Earth was involved in solar storm activity, and there was no solar storm activity. So people were searching for concepts. What's going on here? Why is the Earth experiencing in its outer magnetic field, in the shield magnetic sheath that surrounds Earth, why is it experiencing these solar storm type activities? Some people were saying, oh, it was due to HARP. No, it was not due to HARP, although HARP has been active in the last week or two. But the end result is the Jupiter winds. The winds caused on Earth by an electrical connection with the planet Jupiter. But really, the sun has been very quiet recently. We've had a couple good solar storms, but these are not the cause of what we're seeing here. So at any rate, also wanted to mention, I really don't watch much television. And this past week, though, I happened to be in a place, some other people were watching TV, so I happened to watch also. And I don't know if this show is, I really don't even know where the show came from, if it's an old show. It looked like a fairly recently made television show, but here was the plot. A crazy middle-class man believes God has talked to him and has told him that there's the world was going to end on midnight on a certain day. So he gets his family prepared. They're all prepared, and they've got a bunker in their yard right in suburbia, and they've got all of their equipment there for breathing and filtering air so they could breathe it, all of their food supplies. And so the plot is that this guy is fanatical. His wife, being the nice, intelligent, middle-class lady that she is, goes to see a psychologist about this because the husband has got the family all goofy over this prediction that the world is going to end on midnight. And so anyway, the end result, this goes, the news media is there. You've got police there trying to convince him that he shouldn't be holding his family there. And so anyway, the magical hour is approaching, and he locks his family in, and there is an earthquake. It's pretty obvious this is filmed in Los Angeles. It's a Los Angeles family. And so this guy has the air of a middle-class guy, but kind of crazy. He's got that crazy look in his face. And so anyway, as the hour of midnight strikes, he's locked in his bunker. And all of a sudden, his son, older son, says, I'm getting out of here. If it's going to end, I want to die with my friends. I'm not going to die in here and with all this craziness goes on. Then the younger brother starts to cough and choke and is going into an asthma effect. So he says, the father says, get the breathing apparatus over here. Of course, because they had all this gear stored for survival. So at any rate, the wife gets the breathing apparatus, and she's nervous. She can't make it work. So the guy grabs it, and he says, we've tested this many times. We've had our, practice sessions, and, we're going to stay here. And the mother, by this time, is starting to kind of freak out because the younger brother is choking and he's going to die. So finally the father comes to his senses and he rushes with the son in his arms up to a police helicopter that's waiting, and they rush him off to the hospital. And the end scene is everybody is doing fine. The son is sitting up in his bed, and the father, of course, is realizing the error of his ways, and that the son has now been in the hospital and he's much better now, and he would have lost his son if he would have followed his crazy pattern of believing the world was going to end at midnight. And so the end scene is that here's the family driving down the road, mom, dad, and the two kids in their SUV, driving down in suburbia in Los Angeles, and everything is fine again. So at any rate, this is the plot. So what's the message? Don't believe any goofy people that tell you that at midnight, at some point, the world's going to end. But this is, just for example, the Comet Elenin story in a nutshell. These are disinformation, basically programs to develop a mindset, especially in the American public. The crazy lady talks to aliens, May 15, 2003, Planet X is supposed to crash into Earth, and it never does. That was all a well-orchestrated dog and pony show. And then, of course, the white hats can ride in after that and say, oh, look at how ridiculous these people are. Some clowns recently trying to associate my name with that. These people are working overtime to try and make anybody who lives out of the normal middle-class mode to make them look crazy. So at any rate, just look at the amount of effort being put into this, into mainstream television, programming, bad science, basically. Somebody told me that two Planet X movies have just been released from Hollywood, one where a Planet X, Jupiter-sized planet crashes into Earth and destroys Earth. Well, what's the misinformation message there? That Planet X is a big round ball like Jupiter, and that's the way it would appear in the sky. Total misinformation. Or that it has to crash into Earth to cause damage. You know, Planet X is going to look like a big comet. So the point is, the spin media, the spin disinformation network out there is just pumping out information at record pace to try and drown out my message, to try and drown out real information from getting to the public. There isn't a day that goes by with somebody doesn't send me a reference to one of the other copycat pages, and they go, gee, these people sound like they're talking about your stuff, but it sounds different and kind of goofy, and they never reference you, you know. And it's like, yeah, those are the government supported quack pages that want to make this whole topic upside down and topsy-turvy. So anyway, not a lot on that, but I thought I'd comment on that show I saw that this crazy middle-class man decides that God talked to him and end of the world is going to happen on midnight someday. Anyway, delusion people, delusionary people, and those people are around. But just remember that a lot of them have been used to fulfill the disinformation crew's goals of creating a lot of flack in the area of what should really be a lot of information, real information going out to the public. Okay, changing topics just a little bit. There is not a planet out there that does not still have comet-like properties. Now, a comet, of course, is not a dirty snowball. It's not something that melts when it's near the sun. The comets are a discharge of the solar capacitor. But I remember, what was it, about 5-6 years ago when the last comet probe went by a comet. And there have been many of them, and they took pictures. There's no ice. There's no snow. And every time that happens, NASA has to go back and regroup. And then all of a sudden, there they are again. Oh, well, comets are dirty snowballs, those little icy wanderers. And it's so absurd, it becomes beyond absurd, because the data that comes back is so contradictory. It is so absolutely contradictory. But yet they pop this up again. They have to keep trying to drive this home to the public. They have their disinformation agents out there. They have their tier three bloggers out there trying to defend NASA and its theories, the textbook repeaters, etc. But going back to my original comment, the comets are really a discharge of the solar capacitor. That means that any object in the solar system basically is also discharging that capacitor. Comets discharge it to a greater degree because they're in elliptical orbits around the sun. And so the planets, being in the near circular orbits, discharge that capacitor to a lesser degree, but they still are discharging that capacitor. So thus my original comment that there is not a planet, and I should add to that, or a moon, because there are many moons. I believe there's about 40 significant moons in the solar system. There is not a planet or moon that does not still have comet-like properties, discharging the solar capacitor and having properties that appear like a comet. And Earth is no exception. We have a magnetic tail that exists on Earth, and that actually mislabeled as a magnetic tail, really an electrical current, and all of the magnetic effects are secondary. Of course, once again, standard science completely off the wall with regard to the what they call the magnetic tail and all the magnetic effects. There is a more fundamental cause of all this, because Earth is in a electrical discharge of the solar capacitor, and it is responsible for much of our weather. Okay, just a quick note here. The U.S. Postal Service, in the news, basic central infrastructure is failing in the United States. This is as if the entire road system starts to break apart and crumble, and you just simply can't go any place anymore. How is it that this country has been so mismanaged that the postal service is going down? I remember back in the Ronnie Reagan days, it's pretty ridiculous. Ron, I think he passed a presidential mandate that said that the post office had to get up and running immediately after a nuclear war. Now, if there were a nuclear war, I can't imagine anybody who would really need their electric light bill or gas bill or water bill, because I think the world would be a bit different at that point. But Ronnie wanted the mail service to begin immediately again so that our country could start rebuilding. This is after an all-out nuclear war with Russia. Remember that Ronnie was the president still in the midst of the Russian Cold War, and of course that somewhat ended when the Russian Empire broke apart. And the reason it broke apart is because they were racing with the United States on a Star Wars like program. Ronnie Reagan just about broke the United States, much to the advancement of wealth of many of his colleagues out in the Western California aerospace industries. But at any rate, the back to the Postal Service. The Postal Service is failing. Reduced services, reduced expectations, and it should be one of the central core parts of the United States. They've never entered the electronic business. scenario. They could have been basically in charge of all of the communication that businesses do in an official sense. In other words, you would send something to the post office, they would deliver it across the country and also verify its contents. They could have had all kinds of electronic business, but to continue sending paper mail around, definitely it's a business whose days are numbered, and not to mention junk mail. Did the post office really believe that it could continue sending junk mail and make a living off of it? What moron was in charge of that operation? That's all I can say. Another note on wind generation. The failure of the three-blade wind system was inevitable. This was planned obsolescence. The design was originally done by NASA. I believe it was down in Alabama where they did a lot of the work, but I'm not really sure on that. But it was a NASA design where they tried to make the most efficient wind generation, and then, of course, that's what everybody had to use afterwards. Nobody ever assumed that the NASA design was flawed, that it was a designed obsolescence. And so what do we have? Probably 20 years at least of installation of wind systems, the three-blade wind systems, which never could have worked with the type of wind generation or electrical generation from wind. They don't work at low wind speeds. They have at a 30 mile an hour wind, they run at what they call 100% efficiency, but there's really it's running at about 20% efficient on an annual basis. So basically, the system never could possibly work. Besides, even if you did have enough wind power to support your infrastructure, then when the wind's not blowing, what do? You still have to have that big coal-driven power plant over there, and you can't all of a sudden just switch on a coal plant like you do a light switch. On a daily basis, say the wind slows down at a certain point, you can't just switch that coal-burning plant on and off like that. It takes days and days to get it up to speed to working temperature and working efficiently. So at any rate, but here's the point I want to make, that people now have a very sour negative taste in their mouth regarding wind generation. And so the attitude now is that, wind cannot work. Wind is a boondoggle. When the reality is that it was the NASA design. It was planned obsolescence. So you have companies like GE or other major aerospace companies who had a big investment in nuclear generation, who were promoting this concept. In fact, GE probably got a lot of money that came from government public subsidies of wind generation, etc. Siemens, some of the other major companies that had investments or engineering investments, I might say, in the wind generation industry. Of course, they made some revenue there, but what they were really doing is protecting their investment in nuclear energy and related systems, or in the other case of other companies, with coal or with propane. So the wind generation investment was simply a cover story that guaranteed that wind would be a failure and that the current big generation systems, propane, coal, and nuclear, would remain. The Bank of America is crashing and burning as we speak. So I guess if you got money in that place, get it out quick. But it seems that I was told today that the money that the government has set up to bail out Bank of America will only go to the derivatives, the owners of derivatives, of the failed loans on of the Bank of America. So if you have cash in savings in Bank of America, the money that's going to come from the government isn't to help you. It's simply to pay off the derivative owners, the bad loans that have been purchased by other third-party investors. Here's a cashier scam, and I got this on an email from a fan. And I thought, man, I got to talk about this thing on my show. So anyway, a new topic here. This is a cashier scam, and the people were saying that it happened to them at Walmart, of all places. But anyway, here's how it works. You go in and you go around the store and you pick up all the things you want to buy. And in a store like Walmart, it's not, in fact, you can hardly ever get out of there for less than $100, $100, $200. And you're picking up things that don't cost much money, but you add it all together. You've got a $100, $150 bill to pay. And so most people now pay with a credit card or a debit card. So here's what has been happening. And there must be a wide-scale use of this to defraud the public. Okay, you give your credit or debit card to the cashier. They, you know, have already rung up all of your goods for sale. They run your card, and then they give you back your card. You sign it. You take your receipt. Of course, there's people waiting in line. You're not going to sit there and read your receipt with 25 things on it and add up all the money and see if that's the right amount. No, you take your receipt, stick it in your pocket, take all your stuff, put it out in the car, and you just assume that everybody has been treating you fairly. So what they're finding out is, here's the scam. The person at the cash register registers a cash back on your card. It might be $20, it might be $40, but they don't give you the cash. And so you can ask for cash back, and then your bank also will charge you extra on that. But basically, then the person at the end of the day can take the money over the balance of the till, put that money in their pocket, and walk away. And so at any rate, that's the scam. So when you go to a store, if you, no matter what it is, if you can, watch as the people ring up the items. Make sure they're not ringing it up twice. That's one thing I always thought, you know, that they're going ding, ding, and they got that little electronic laser reader for the barcodes on the food or whatever you're buying. And it's ring, 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 and it's happening so fast you can hardly keep track of it. And all of a sudden, the bill is done. Ding, they give you the bill. Okay, sign it here, and you're on your way. But what you have to do is, first of all, watch everything they do. Ring, ring. Okay, then when you get done, look at the bottom or look in the middle someplace to make sure that they haven't added in that cash back. In other words, they would. You can request that when you're making a purchase. You request it. You say, I want $20, I want $40, I want $100 cash back. And then they give you the money. Well, how are you going to convince the bank 2 weeks from now that you didn't get any money? They're going to believe the store or the cashier or whatever. Oh, no, he took the money when you didn't, and the cashier stuck it in their pocket. So once again, when you go to a restaurant or whenever you get that credit card slip back, make sure that it has doesn't have a cash back line on it, and it always would be an even number like $20 or $40 or $60 or $80 or $100. Make sure that is not on there. And if it is, what this person said when he caught the cashier doing this, then a supervisor came out and says, oh, well, you're going to have to take your cash. And the guy goes, I don't want my cash. I never asked for cash. And the guy goes, well, you got to take it. They knew that that this scam was going on. Even the supervisor apparently knew it. And so the guy says, no. And he says, I don't want it, because then your bank is going to charge you too. They're going to charge you a fee on top of that. And so anyway, he said, okay, take everything back. Check it all back in. And so that's what they did. I already mentioned there's a couple Planet X Hollywood movies out. I don't tend to go to waste my time with those kind of things, but I think it'd be more interesting to see just from the point of view of misinformation. Another story this week, the CO2 emissions for this year hit record levels. And of course, the implication is that it's global warming, and in 20 years, we're not meeting the Kyoto Protocol that says that by the year 2025, we're supposed to be 20% lower in emission or something. Some ridiculous statement that is not going to do anybody any good. But the thing that's missing here is that pollution is occurring. The tremendous amount of pollution in, for example, electrical generation from coal. All of that pollution going out into the atmosphere, and all they talk about is CO2, CO2. And most people think, well, CO2, that's not bad. I mean, when we breathe, we give off CO2. And so it's kind of like part of us, and it's air, and you can't see it. But nobody talks about the pollution issue. So the pollution issue goes unnoticed, unreported, unnoticed. And that's, once again, one of the beautiful designs of misinformation. Create a cover story. Create a story over here so that it's like the magician pulling the rabbit out of the hat on the stage. He's got you looking over here while he's moving the rabbit into the hat so he can pull the rabbit out of the hat. Deception is an important part of governing also, because to make that rabbit come out of the hat every time, every election or whatever, you need basically diversion, divert the public's attention, and then you can pull the rabbit out of the hat and they'll all clap because they think that you're such a great magician. Okay, changing topics just a little bit. As most of you know, this past week, Congress 97-3 passed a law stating that U.S. military can, without cause, without court order, without any reason, arrest and maintain and move to any other part of the world American citizens. This follows the Obama assassination of an American citizen. We really don't know much about these people that have been assassinated. In a lot of cases, they were CIA agents at one time, possibly crossed over. Who knows what really goes on behind the scenes? But the ability of a president or the military, through whatever means or monitoring means they have of citizens, to simply go out and gather up people and put them away wherever, just spanks of pre-World War II Germany, the SSS. And by the way, I happened to be traveling recently, and went through an airport, and a woman who was working for the Homeland Security had a vest on which said nothing more than SSS. I think we're fully back to Nazi Germany in the United States. So at any rate, and we all know where that came from, as the history books are really distorted on the topic of where the Nazis came from, who they were, I was found it interesting. I saw some interviews that were done, I believe it was a YouTube, that was a result of work that Alex Jones had done, and they interviewed people on the street regarding this new law that the military can go arrest anybody at any time and put them away. The majority of people they interviewed were in agreement, stating things like, well, I don't have anything to worry about. I don't do anything wrong, so you know, the people would say things like that. Or one woman said, yes, I totally agree. You know, the American public is so stupid. You have to understand that the people that listen to this show, for example, are what I call the five percenters. The small minority of people who have a brain anymore. The rest of the people out there, if you walk up and down the street and try and talk to people, you're going to find blank stares. Like, what are you talking about? They have no clue. They have been dumbed down to the point where understanding or seeing behind the scenes or having a clue as to what's going on this planet, they simply have no clue. How many people have you heard say something like, oh, I listen to the news every day. I'm informed. No, you're programmed is what it is. People just have absolutely no idea what's going on in the world. And that's the vast majority of people. So changing this world at this point, I would say, would be easier to stop a train going over a cliff, which you can't do, of course, than to try and stop the train wreck that is society today. Okay, switching to the main science topic. This is, I always find that, you know, this is somewhat like a comedian. Comedians that do political satire always have a vast wealth of information and subjects and topics to talk about because there's so much ridiculous activity in the political world. Well, in the world of science, it's no different for me. I mean, I have 10 topics every week that just are absolutely absurd and ridiculous that come out of standard science. And what it gives me is, first of all, a way to present this to people and show how ridiculous the news is regarding science, but then it gives me also a platform to talk about what's really going on and in science. I'm going to start with just a little commentary on my book, The Diamond Principle. The book deals, it's kind of divided into two parts. The first part is a critique of society as viewed from a distance. In other words, from an objective observation point, from a distance observing society today. And this is from a viewpoint of a couple hundred years into the future, where people are looking back and going, at a time when we're burning up Earth's natural resources at a staggering rate just so everybody can drive back and forth to work in an SUV and own a house in the suburbs, which is very much overpriced because everybody's paying interest on this on phony money. What a ridiculous concept, but using up the world's natural resources at a breakneck pace. But the point is that the first part of the book deals with the critical view of society and what should be our main goal. When you get done seeing that, you see that a critical central point of society has to be a space program, but a real space program, one that is meant to get millions of people into outer space. And so when you realize that, you realize that NASA is nothing but a front to keep you from getting into space. They have their Trekkies and groupies and bloggers and a whole fleet of news media, Discover Magazine, Sky and Telescope, Astronomy Magazine, National Geographic, New York Times, Washington Post, the just standard news media, the Fox News Network that comes out of Atlanta, screened and homogenized for your listening or viewing from the Fox News Center in Atlanta, Georgia. All of this being pawned off on the public as science, or how about the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, very much coordinated to give the public a very distorted view of reality. So anyway, yeah, when you get done with the first half of my book, The Diamond Principle, you realize a couple things, that NASA is simply a front. It's a smokescreen, and its main purpose is to keep progress capped so that the public has no clue. It's a waste of resources, and it's actually a smokescreen to cover for what I call Tier 1 science, the real science going on in the background, which is secret. Okay, part 2 of the book talks about how we can go into outer space and how easy it is, how nature has provided us with a grand plan. And it's very simple. But going by rockets, for example, is not, absolutely not the way to go into space. But you see NASA concentrating for decades. We've had the shuttle, which was a failed space program. I just talked this show about the failed NASA three-blade wind generator, which has been installed all over the world, and it's a failure. It was a failure from the get-go. It was obsolescence. It was a lesson in pre-planned obsolescence. It never could have worked. And it, now the public sentiment is wind power, that's terrible. No, wind power is good, but the three-blade wind power system designed by NASA is the problem. It always was the problem, and it should have never been installed. But there again, scientists and engineers are not taught to question how many millions of, or probably millions of scientists and engineers worked around these three-blade systems, never questioning their real getting into the nitty-gritty. And once they were used for a long time, all of the obvious problems should have been obvious from the beginning. There was never any quality control, any real examination done of that three-blade system. And so it is with outer space. So the second part of my book, The Diamond Principle, talks about how we should be going into space. But it also talks about the requirement of NASA to provide bad science and astronomy to the public to keep the public stupid. So every day that goes by that NASA can do that is another day that the public is clueless about their birthright to the stars, about their ability to go into space, and that we should be sending millions of people now after 30 to 40 years of a space program. We should have millions of people into space, but that concept completely escapes people because they're so used to seeing the space shuttle go off with 7 people in it, and they go to a little tin can that's orbiting Earth. How ridiculous. NASA, you know, remember the movie 2001 had the orbiting space station, and there was false gravity in there because it rotated, using the principle of centrifugal force to create false gravity. And NASA, in its decades and decades of having a space station in space, has never used that simple concept. I mean, how blatantly absurd can you get? But at any rate, this past week, the point of this discussion, this past week, NASA made an announcement, and it popped up on CNN and all the major disinformation news sites. It says NASA announces exoplanet that could be fit for human, basically, habitation. Now, talk about a ridiculous announcement. And I'll be talking about all the details of what would an exoplanet need. Now, remember that an exoplanet is not a planet in our solar system. It's a planet orbiting a star way out there, thousands of light years away. First of all, how are we going to get there? NASA can't get a mouse into low Earth orbit. why would they talk about going to the next, not the next star, but a star very far away, in hopes of finding a habitable place? And by the way, just as an aside note, we happen to live on the only planet in our own solar system which has even a small semblance of of the kind of planet that we need to have, the conditions we need for habitability, you might say, the ability to habitate a planet. So the way they look at these planets, they're just starting to discover them. How absurd for NASA to say we've found one that's habitable, as if we're all going to pack our bags and go there tomorrow. How absolutely ridiculous, how absurd, when NASA has no plan or no ability to get even to the next, to the moon, let alone to the next star, or a star that's even not even the next star. So how ridiculous. So what I want to do first is to mention a bunch of the factors that, first of all, NASA cannot measure, but that are factors that are extremely important to human compatibility with a planet. So let me just start on this laundry list of compatibility factors. The composition of the atmosphere, the atmospheric pressure. Okay, the composition of the atmosphere. Look at the air we breathe here. The composition of oxygen, nitrogen, carbon dioxide, the other minor components in the atmosphere, all necessary for our survival. The plant cycle here that is mixed in, that gives off carbon dioxide. The local input that comes from outer space all the time. One thing that I've mentioned in my weather book is that the Earth is continually drawing in water from outer space. We see that in storm systems. So the environment of the planet around the planet in space, what's that like? Okay, atmospheric pressure. We need a certain amount of atmospheric pressure to function properly. Is it too low? Is it too high on this exoplanet? These are factors that NASA cannot measure. Composition of the land, the dirt for agriculture, are there contaminants that are bad for man? Arsenic would be one of them. The contamination in water, is there water? Is it fresh water? Most of the water on planet Earth is saline. It has too much salt in it. In areas that are dry, they can't just take seawater and put it on the land. That salt would kill the plants, and they wouldn't grow. So what's the composition of water on the planet? On Earth, arsenic is one of the primary contaminants in the water. There are many places in the United States, for example, that cannot have their own water system because the arsenic level is too high. The government has set standards, and many places have too much arsenic in their water. It's a common common element in the ground, in groundwater. How about the light composition that comes from the star? We need a very certain composition of light. Is there too much ultraviolet? Is there not enough light that we need for our health? Is there too much infrared? What's the light composition from the star? Is the atmosphere of the planet sufficient to block X-rays coming from the star? Like our own atmosphere, it all of the X-ray activity, not all of it, if we have a bad solar storm or an X-ray storm, a lot of that X-ray activity comes in. Is the star putting out cosmic rays on too frequent a basis? The rotation rate of the planet? Our planet Earth rotates every 24 hours. This is needed to keep the temperature within a certain range. In that 12 hours of nighttime, the Earth cools down about 20 degrees. If the planet Earth rotated slower, then we would dip down into a frigid zone that would not allow life to be very convenient or easy on Earth, and probably would have never evolved to the point we're at. So the rotation rate of the planet is extremely critical. Okay, how about a moon? Our moon, as I've explained in my books, is part of the electrical magnetic system that we are in, the Earth-Moon system. And that creates a magnetic field that then supports a not only a geomagnetic field in the Earth, but a magnetic shield around Earth that blocks the solar wind from constantly pounding on our atmosphere. And that it keeps the solar wind away. It's kind of like a shield out there, magnetic shield. Does the planet have a magnetic sheath? And is it going to be there constantly? A lot of these planets, they say, are moons. And so the point is that a moon orbiting another planet is going to have some cycling of that magnetic sheath as it comes out from behind the planet into the wind from the star, the solar wind from the star, the fusion wind, I call it. It's going to get a burst. I mean, every time that moon goes around the planet, this is in the exoplanets, it's going to get nailed with solar wind and break down the local magnetic field. Is that going to be small enough that we could exist there? How about the amount of space debris in the region of the planet? That's something NASA can't measure. You wouldn't know that until you actually got there. What if this planet is in the middle of an asteroid belt and is constantly being bombarded by small to medium-sized asteroids? Would make life pretty miserable if every couple hours there was another meteorite crashing into this thing. How about severe weather? If this is locked into the other planets' electric fields as they rotate around the planet, periodically you could have extremely devastating severe weather, either snowstorms or rainstorms or tornadoes or hurricanes over land. I call them hurricanes, or the hurricanes, the type of weather. I mean, how would you land there and build a society if this were the kind of weather conditions that you would find there? NASA can't measure that. The number of Planet X-type objects and the frequency of passage in that solar system. Look at all of the factors that NASA cannot measure. And the one thing I should say before this show ends is that we live on a planet. All we got to do is take care of what we've got, which we're not doing. And so why this false hope? Why this overstated science, fake science, to try and convince you that there's a planet we can move to? It's absolutely absurd. Let's just take care of the planet we live on, and I think that's all we can ask for. So once again, visit the webpage jmccsci.com, 7 letters, short for jmccanniscience.com, but just 7 letters, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.